Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Hashmarked and Hardwood on this what's been a very interesting last week of January. Haven't been in the studio at all this week, but we're in for the show. I'm Bryson Hill. No Nicholas today, but we are joined by the man himself, man that runs everything. Today's guest on Hashmarks and Hardwood, last episode, it was Coach Person. This episode, we have Mr. Easter. Welcome in, welcome in.
I'm sorry, my teeth are chattering because it's so cold outside.
It has been a very cold week. I know y'all have had a couple of delays and whatnot, and I know one of those got changed from a delay to an e-learning day. So
yeah, that was really, it's been a really strange week, but hey, we're here. We're good.
We are here. Sorry for the late time, but me and Mr. Easter were in the other room chatting about,
it's my fault,
tonight's game, as the boys are back in action, as it's the Ben Davis Giants versus the Cromwell Greyhounds. I'm on the call tonight with Parker Moore. I think you said it's very rare you get a freshman doing games like he does, so
yeah.
Shout out him, but we're not here to talk about the weather. This is a sports show, so let's talk about sports, and let's talk about, we touched on it a little bit, we touched on the conference games a little bit last week, but let's really go into depth about Super Bowl 60 here. Just your thoughts on Seahawks, Pats. Do you think it'll be a good game? Do you think it'll be a, obviously Super Bowl is always going to be a good spectacle. You got Bad Bunny performing at halftime too, which I know people are a little iffy about. They don't know. Some people like him, some people hate him. It was kind of a interesting decision. So what are your thoughts on Super Bowl 60?
He's actually performed at halftime before in a Super Bowl. It's not like he's brand new. He was part of that J-Lo halftime a few years ago.
I don't know why
I like
people,
Bad Bunny. I think it'd be great.
People are acting, I feel like, as Bad Bunny is just this new artist that's never made music before. I mean, he is the most, he's one of the most streamed artists in the world.
He and Taylor Swift, I believe, are the top two most streamed artists. So,
and specifically, his following in Puerto Rico is huge. Spain, Portugal, his following really
South America,
South America, Central and America. Europe, and all of that.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting how people are like, oh, they'll recognize that name.
Well,
it doesn't mean that he's not, you know, the biggest artist on the planet in one another country. So
what I've found is, especially as I get older, which, you know, happens to all of us, but as I get older, I'll hear a name of maybe an influencer or something, and it'll be like, this person did this, and, you know, this happened. And I'm like, why is this news? And then you read, this person has a billion views on YouTube. And it's like, I've never heard of the person.
Yeah.
But clearly somebody has heard of them and likes them and watches their content or listens to them. So just because you don't necessarily understand why the artist is popular, just realize that there's a reason why the NFL chose this artist.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not like they're going to choose just like anybody to go out there with a guitar. And, you know, I mean, there was that time where they were choosing a lot of older acts, and then they've recently started going back to kind of looking at who's the fresh act. I'm still waiting for BTS to get a halftime show. They've been on hiatus, but I think those are the kind of artists I think that you could expect, especially as the NFL tries to expand itself globally.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. We've seen that. We've seen the Madrid, they expanded to Madrid games. They obviously have had their games, and Colts had a game in Germany this year, pardon me. What else did they do? Obviously, they have their London games that have been going on for a couple of years.
Maybe a day where the Super Bowl is in London. You never know.
Yeah, would be a weird, imagine a Super Bowl at 9 a.m.
True.
Be a little weird. You know what I saw, though? I don't know how true this is, because it could have just been, you know, internet propaganda or whatever.
You gotta, you know, so, it's like a lot of those Facebook things that you see, and it's like, you know, so-and-so did this, and the crowd was stunned. It's like, that's AI.
Yeah.
Don't believe that.
So for
Grandma, don't forward that. Peyton Manning did not sit down with a little kid who was crying backstage at an awards ceremony.
Yeah, that was definitely interesting because my grandpa, he's been a flip phone user his whole life.
Yeah.
So he got a smartphone for the first time last year. So have had to navigate those tricks. Like, don't get clickbaited by that or whatnot. But what I was touching on is the World Cup.
Don't respond to the princes that are sending, asking for money.
Yeah. So the World Cup every 4 years, the soccer / football event, the most viewed event in the world around every country and whatnot. Apparently, I saw something that next World Cup, 2030, it's being hosted in Saudi Arabia.
And well, the next one's in the United States.
Yeah, this year is in U.S., Canada, Mexico, and Mexico. Yeah, yep. So, hoping to get to a game this year. That's a bucket list right there.
But you're talking the next one in 2030.
Four years from now.
Yeah, right.
So it's supposed to be in 2030, but there have been reports, and they did this when they held the last World Cup in Qatar, that it might be too hot for them to hold the World Cup during the summer. So they were talking about they could potentially move the World Cup back to more colder months, which would be December, January, February. And someone was saying along the lines that they could have had the World Cup from January to February, so it would cool down a lot. And in 2031, the Super Bowl and the World Cup final could fall on the same day.
Wow.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, that would be.
Because you would have probably the World Cup, I presume, at 10, 11 a.m. Then you would have the Super Bowl at what it usually starts at now, 6, 7 p.m.
But it would interrupt the pregame show for the Super Bowl.
That is true.
Which I think just started about an hour ago.
That is true. So it would be interesting.
This year, I know Mike Tirico is going to call the Super Bowl.
His first one, I believe.
And then I think maybe two nights later, he's calling the Olympics.
Yeah.
Isn't that how it goes for him?
Yeah, he was just on Pat McAfee.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out. But not really able to watch a bunch of Pat shows and stuff because we're in school, but this weather, it's nice. Turn it on TV, do the e-learning.
Yeah.
Get all set in. Get whatever I need to know. Because yesterday he had a couple of guests in there. He's been a very, obviously, have you seen, he's been on, he's been commentating for the WWE the last couple of years. So WWE has an event. The Royal Rumble's coming up on Saturday in Saudi Arabia. They got their hands on everything now.
They have definitely been aggressive in getting, sports and things over there. F1.
Yeah. Do we see a NFL or NBA game coming over to Saudi anytime soon?
I think it's a matter of time. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the NBA, when you talk about leagues, I know we're talking about the Super Bowl, but when you start talking about leagues that have been international, I mean, obviously the NHL has Canadian teams, the, you know, NBA has Canadian teams, but the NBA has been going international for a long time because they've done games in India. They've done games, I believe, in Japan and China. And I mean, they've definitely tried to. In fact, you see every once in a while on the Pacers social media, it'll say, I flew X number of miles to see the Pacers, and it'll be some fan that's from Asia.
Yeah.
Yep. And so I think that the other sports leagues are trying to replicate maybe what the NBA has done over the years with Michael Jordan kind of becoming that, you know, that global guy. I mean, the NBA has always had stars, but there in the 80s when you had Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and the Lakers and the NBA kind of gave the blueprint on this is how you market your league. You market it around really good players, really good teams, and it still kind of does that today. And it's annoying as a Pacers fan because Pacers aren't playing well this year, obviously, but you still, even when the Pacers were good last year, you didn't see them on national TV, yet you always see the Knicks, you always see the Lakers, you always see the Celtics, because these are those teams that have a lot of fans, a lot of fans maybe outside their market, worldwide. The Pacers don't necessarily move that needle. So when the Pacers get on a national TV event, and it's always good to see that there are Pacers fans across the world, but it does speak to the international flavor that the NFL is trying to really get into. And they've been trying for several years. I mean, they've had games, and they had a game in Brazil this year.
Yeah, well, it's not even to just touch on the fan base either of the NBA, how they have international fans. How many in the last 15, 20 years, decade now, have we seen people from overseas come in and play in the national basketball. Like, for one of the – Johnny Furphy right now from Australia. Like, there's a bunch of these people. I'm pretty sure Steven Adams is from Australia as well. I mean, a bunch of these people are international. Obviously, the number one pick in the SGA. Draft a couple of years. SGA, Canadian. Benedict Mathurin, another right. Canadian. Andrew Nembhard, another Canadian. Like, we could go on and on. Like, number one pick in the draft. Yeah, Luka Doncic. Victor Wembanyama was the number one overall pick a couple of years. He's from France. So we've really just seen the NBA expand so much when it comes to internationally.
And it's not just Europe now. Yeah. You know, you're starting to see players from all around. Giannis from Greece, which is Europe. But, you know, you're starting to see players from just all around the world that are coming to play in the NBA. Yao Ming
from China. Definitely. We've seen more of an Asian representation and mm-hmm. South American too. Just a bunch of different people coming in and stuff. And I think the NFL is just trying to hit the mark when it comes to...
Well, in the NFL's case, and I know that when they go abroad, because we saw this when the Colts went to Berlin... Were they in Berlin this time?
Yeah.
So when they went to Berlin, but when they've been in other cities too, across the country, it not only is the Colts that go, but it is the entire NFL. They set up an NFL shop where you can mm-hmm. basically go in, because for a lot of these people around the world, they may not have the familiarity. Yeah, thank you. They may not have the familiarity with American football. You know, they know soccer. They know basketball is a global sport. Mm-hmm. Soccer, hockey, to a certain degree, is a global sport. But when you start looking at a sport that's really largely been an American sport, like American football, you're introducing that sport. And I always think it's kind of funny because, like, you know, some of those areas that are more interested in soccer, they're cheering for extra points and field goals and stuff because they see kickers, you know, the rugby. You know, you see, like, those sports, they're familiar with the art of kicking the football. And so a lot of times they'll cheer for, like, things that American fans wouldn't cheer for. And I always think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and it's kind of silly, obviously, but we think of it as you mentioned, like an extra point or something. We always imagine it as, if you ask someone who doesn't watch football, how many points is a touchdown worth? Seven. Well, now you got to kick the
six plus one extra point
too, because a lot of people, you know, we're just expecting these PATs to be made. But yeah, it's a great point you make there too. And then,
and by the way, how many doinks have we seen lately?
That's what I was just gonna say. I don't.
Talking about kicking.
What's going on with the kicking game this year?
I mean,
last year was pretty bad, too.
You've got guys kicking 70-yard field goals, which is just mind-blowing. Now, I mean, the dude from Jacksonville has a leg and a half.
Cam Little, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, you look at all that, but I don't ever remember seeing this many doinks, especially on, like, short kicks. You know, it's just bang right off the upright.
Man, they are. They're costly doinks, too.
Yeah.
Like, the one of the most recent ones I can remember was the last game of the season. It was the Ravens and Steelers. Chris Boswell missed that extra point, and then Tyler Lute missed the game-winning field goal, and it's just like, dang.
Also, yeah.
I just never under... Oh, man, the hate comments. They're just so unnecessary. Because can you imagine even, like... Let's say you're going out. I don't know how many people are at Baltimore Stadium, but 70,000 people watching you. You're going out to kick a kick with the football. Not easy. But then I get the argument. I don't get the hate side argument of it. I don't get the "hey, I hope your cereal's burnt" comment on Instagram. But I don't get that part. But I also get the flip side argument of that. Hey, this is your job. Like, you shouldn't miss this. Like, you are a kicker. Like, that's like you not knowing how to run the radio station. Like, this is your job. Like, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to be able to utilize that to your best advantage. So,
like a wide receiver that can't catch a ball.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your job is to go kick the ball. And, you know, I think everybody takes kickers for granted until your kicker struggles. And we've seen that a little bit with the Colts. Not so much this year. I know, although they went through three kickers.
We did see that with, blanking on his name.
Yeah, me too.
The man who went through between Spencer Schrader and Blake Groupie.
Right.
Michael Badgley.
Yeah, there we go. He was good on field goals.
Yeah.
But he missed, what, four extra points?
He missed three PATs, and then he signed with the Bills, and then he missed an extra point.
Yeah.
Right after that.
But so kicking is a premium thing. So there are very few Adam Vinatieri's out there. So you just hope to get somebody who is a reliable kicker with a leg that, I mean, because they are critical. I mean, the game can come down to that leg. And if you got to send somebody out there for a 60-yard field goal, the chances that they're going to make it, especially if you're playing the Colts, the chances that they're going to make it is always really good.
Yeah, and I saw something on Twitter a couple months ago. It was that game against the Seahawks, that first Phillip Rivers game, where the defense played great, but it was like, it's crazy now that a drive at the 20-yard line to get you into field goal range takes two plays and 23 seconds to hit a 61-yarder.
Yeah. Now,
10, 15 years ago, it would have taken 10 more yards, like, to hit a 45-yarder. So.
Well, and you have coaches now, and we saw this weekend. I mean, obviously, a little bit of questioning of Sean Payton's game management when he had a chance to go up 10, and he passed on the field goal and went for it on fourth down. You see coaches now passing on those short field goals, but yet they'll send a guy out for a 68-yard field goal. But they'll pass on, like, fourth down and three at your own 7, and they won't take the points. And we saw Sean McVay. He passed up a field goal that would have cut the lead to 1. So then you get the ball back with, like, 26 seconds, and you have to go all the way down the field. Whereas maybe Matt Stafford could have gotten the ball, you know, up near the 50-yard line. They could have tried a long field goal to try to win that game. So, you know, it's one of those things. The coaching decisions in the NFL have changed, because back in my day, if you were like 4th and 4 at your own set, or at the not your own 4, but at the other team's 4, you're gonna maybe kick field goal. Now, with analytics and everything, they're like, we're going.
The way I really viewed it as, and the way I've always viewed it as a fan and as a coach, you know, I come from, you know, not myself. I've never played football. My uncle played football. My dad played football, you know, and I always, you know, kind of took in just get the guaranteed points. It's always kind of how I view football. Like, that's always how I.
And the coaches that do that are almost like you don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
Like Shane Steichen goes for every 4th and 1.
You know who's a big example of this is Dan Campbell for Detroit.
Oh, Dan Campbell.
He always goes.
It could be on his own 27-yard line, and he's going for it.
It's to an extent, like, I get if you have a play like you like, and maybe it's 4th and 1, 4th and 2 in your own territory. Like, I get, but don't, even if you have a play you're like, if you're at your own, like, 20, don't call it on like a 4th down and 5. Like, that's just silly.
There's so much belief in analytics anymore, which is fine because the computers have done all the calculations and stuff. Analytics are really great if you're able to do it, you know, if you're able to make it work. I mean, it's like analytics 54. I mean, and even the media has now leaned into that because it'll say 4th and 3 analytics 54% go. You know, you've seen stuff like that. I think NBC kind of leans into that maybe more than some of the other networks, but it's like that's still what 54% is still like 46% you won't make it, which is still a pretty big number, especially if you're somewhere on your own side of the field. I don't know. Sometimes I think it's best to just punt. But then again, I'm like you. I've never coached a game. Never really played a game of football. I've been an avid football fan and watcher. I have played Madden a lot, and I got to say, I probably think like Dan Campbell when I'm playing Madden. But then again, my, you know, my job, the job of all my friends and family, and, you know, it's not on the line. So that's a pressure situation. And he's got the Applebee's ads too. So there you go.
Yeah. And, well, people aren't very happy about this. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Super Bowl 60 uniforms have a little bit of patches on them. People aren't a fan of that. What do you, I don't think
that's anything that's new. I see.
That's what I was saying too. I said, I don't see why this is a problem, because you have the team's logo, obviously standard. You got to have the team's logo. Then you have the Super Bowl logo, also standard, and literally every other Super Bowl they've played. And I think the only thing that's really been added the last couple of years, this year they have the USA 250,
right,
which is like, it's not a huge deal. You know,
right, that's the NFL's big initiative right now with that.
Might as well. And then they've added the Big C the last couple of,
like, for captain
years. Yeah, so
yeah.
I don't get the issue.
I don't recall that being something new, but then again, I've slept a lot since the previous Super Bowls. I will say, though, that the Super Bowl logos in general have gotten very bland. I will say that, because it used to be like, if the Super Bowl was in Miami, you had a big old dolphin or something on it, and, you know, it was something that, or if it was in New Orleans, like, you might have Mardi Gras stuff around it. But now it's just basically,
that's what I would,
the Indy 500 logos have gotten very corporate and very, you know, it's like used to be every Indy 5, maybe they just ran out because, you know, they've done, what, 108 Indy 500s? But maybe they just ran out of ideas, and they just are like, let's just do the shield and the flag and do different colors every year. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, well, I know, man, obviously I know you're a big racing fan. The Indy 500 was really last year, 2020. I guess we're in 2026, man. So tired. But that was 2025 Indy 500. That was an entertaining. I had an entertaining, fun time watching the 500 last year.
I
don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the crashes. I don't know if it was the people constantly overtake. I don't. If it was the close finish, like, I don't know what did it.
I don't know. I'm mixed feelings. I think Alex Palou was obviously a worthy champion of the 500 and was happy to see him get the 500 because he won everything else almost last year.
Yeah.
Really happy to see him have his face on the Borg Warner trophy. I don't think it was probably one of the best 500s. I think maybe the year before, when you had Joseph Newgarden and Pato Award, and you had a pass in the third turn on the last lap for the win, that was exciting. But I think people now are spoiled, because if you went back to the 80s and you saw a race like that one last year, you would think, man, this is the greatest race of all time. Because, you know, 1989 is famous for Allanser Jr. versus Emerson Fittipaldi, and they had a big battle going back and forth. People don't realize they were the only two cars on the lead lap in that race.
Yeah.
Because people just don't realize that, and they used to have a lot more mechanical trouble and things where cars would go out. You might end up with, like, I think 1996, I think they ended up with, like, 9 cars running at the end. So to have that many cars on the lead lap in contact with the leader is amazing. And I think sometimes people lose sight of that. Like, people cite, like, the year Will Power won, they think that was kind of a boring race. But yet it's like, you had, I don't know how many lead changes that race. It was in the 20s or 30s. Whereas, you know, you might have like 13 in the 80s. You just didn't have, you know, the kind of things that we see today. Really, you go back to 1982 when you had Gorton Johncock and Rick Mears finish like 0.16 second apart. That was like shocking, because back then, you know, if you had a car on the lead lap with you and you were the champion, it was pretty impressive. To have two cars 500 miles that close. But I think IndyCar is to the point where they need some more innovation, and they're working on it with the new car and everything. I mean, this car is a teenager now. You know, it's a DW12, came out in 2012. It's had some major updates, and they've changed the aero kits, and they've bolted on new safety things, and it's been a great car. Dallar did a great job with it, but it's time for something new. But on the other side of that, you're like, why do we do anything new? Because we have these great Indy 500s. Mm-hmm. You know, the car races well. And so there's probably a little bit of a trepidation, maybe, that the product won't be as good. But then again, you keep bolting things on this car and you keep weighing it down, and then it changes the way the cars perform and how they pass and other things. So it's kind of like they're always trying to figure out ways to lighten up the car, because when you lighten up the car, then it's easier for them to maneuver. And so, yeah, that's more of a May discussion.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think it was a great race last year. We've been lucky in the last 15, 20 years that we've had some really spectacular Indy 500s. And I think this year will probably be the same.
Yeah, I've been trying to get into racing a little more, because like you said to me a couple of weeks ago, if you're going to be in this media space in this area, got to get to know this stuff. Shout out to our own.
Huge.
I know you'll have him on the show next week. Zion Brown. He's writing for Indy Star now.
Yeah, so. He's the motorsports reporter for the Indy Star, yeah. Which is a prestige position when you're writing motorsports for the Indianapolis newspaper.
Yeah.
You saw it this week. Oscar Mayer is bringing back the Wiener 500.
Really?
On Carb Day. And it's going to be on Fox.
Mm-hmm.
On Big Fox. They're going to have the Wienermobile race will be on Big Fox this year, which I think is pretty amazing. I guess Oscar Mayer sold so many hot dogs. Like, I saw the number, but it's escaping me. And they were like, yeah, we've hit something here, because it became such a viral thing. The the Wienermobiles going around the Indy 500 racetrack, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Do you think they'll ever have a Wienermobile in the museum? That will be the question.
Yeah.
So they'll have, like, you know, the BorgWarner trophy, the winning Indy 500 car, the winning Brickyard 400 car, and the Wienermobile that won.
You know, two fun facts about that. My first ever, I shouldn't say first ever, but my first ever, right before middle school, I had a field trip to the racetrack, so that's fun. Got the tour of everything.
It's amazing.
It's a really,
if you've driven by the Indy 500 and you've never, or the Indy 500, if you've driven by the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and you've never gone in, just one day, just go in. And you can go in, look around. That place is huge.
So it's funny. I was in the Speedway a couple of months ago for the Rule of the Road event, I think.
Yeah, Rule of the Road Indiana.
And so it's funny. So Stingray Rob came to Danville, where I go, for the listeners, and he signed everyone's lanyards. He gave his autograph.
Awesome dude.
But guess who was not there, because he was here at Area 31? Me.
But then
guess who got to meet Stingray Rob a couple months ago at the Roll the Road event?
Yeah.
So it all worked out.
Stingray Rob, a guy that has been, Grant Covey, who's one of our graduates of this program, he actually... is the organizer of the Rule the Road program.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
That was a great event. I mean, that was a great experience for new drivers, whatever you want to call it. And it wasn't also just because it's not like they pressure you either. It's, you know, it's stations, do whatever you want. I tell one event that messed with me, man. I did that. It wasn't my first time, because I've taken health class and stuff in the past, but man, these were really dialed in. I put on those drunk goggles.
Yeah.
And you try to walk between the cones or whatever. Or I think mine was, they had me step about 10, 15 feet away, and they put the keys on a separate table, and you have to like try to go and get your keys or whatever while you have the goggles. Awful.
Yeah.
Awful. But
it's a really cool event, and IMS is cool for hosting it.
Yeah, couldn't have asked for better weather that day either.
No.
I'm tell you what, ready for this spring weather.
I'm ready for any kind of weather other than what we have.
This, maybe. But let's turn back to a little bit of football. Super Bowl 60, Seahawks, Patriots. What is your final score predictions?
Well, we still got 2 weeks of hype to go for the Super Bowl.
I know we could probably, we'll talk about it a little bit.
I think that the Seahawks are a really good football team. And I think the Patriots still have a lot of question marks as far as, you know, looking at what they're able to do. I think Mike Vrabel has done a heck of a job with that Patriots team. I mean, last year they weren't even anywhere near the playoffs, and they've kind of been in the wilderness for a few years now. Kind of hard to feel sorry for the Patriots, though, yeah, with the championships that they've won with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, who is somehow not a first ballot Hall of Famer, and Robert Kraft, and, you know, that whole organization. They've just done so many amazing things. But I would say I think it's going to come down to, can the Patriots handle that defense? I mean, that is an excellent defense. I mean, it's, you know, kind of one of the staples of – and then I'm really happy for Sam Darnold, because you're a cast-off where you've been, and he catches on there, and I'm really happy for him. I'd like to see him win the Super Bowl. So I will pick the Seattle Seahawks 31-14.
I really – and I'm a fan of both these quarterbacks too. Yeah, I think Drake May is a great quarterback, great person.
But you would figure Drake May is going to have
come back,
probably more opportunities.
Yeah, Drake May, I mean, he is just talented. It's not even mentioned. Sam Darnold's what? He's not even 30 yet, is he? Or is he 30?
I don't think he is. Yeah, I think he's still young.
He's only, what, like 28, 27? I don't know.
Another quarterback the Colts passed on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, let's talk about that, because I just have two more talking
Matt
points.
Matt Stafford, the Colts passed on Matt Stafford.
Did do that and said we went for a Carson Wentz, I think, that season.
Hey, and that made a lot of sense at the time, but it didn't pan out. Same thing with Matt Ryan. Made a lot of sense at the time. Didn't pan out.
Worst season.
Yeah.
Got the fourth overall pick, Anthony Richardson. Who knows where that ship is sailing.
That was a risk, and so far it hasn't paid off.
Well, let's stay on that same kind of wavelength of Colts quarterbacks. There's two more talking points I want to get with the last 5 minutes or so on air. First one being, what do the Indianapolis Colts do this offseason? Not only when it comes to the Colts, not only when it comes to the quarterback position with Daniel Jones, do you resign Daniel Jones? Hope he heals up nicely with that torn Achilles. Do you go for someone else? And also, not to talk about the stud this season that's been Alec Pierce.
Yeah.
Got to resign him, in my opinion, whether that's letting Michael Pittman go. I don't know. There's a lot of cap issues. There's a lot of, not to mention, Shane Steichen returns for his fourth year, I believe. Chris Ballard returns for his 10th year, correct? Something like that. But kind of your thoughts, what should the Colts do when it comes to free agency? I think you got to resign AP, but quarterback is that big old question mark, as it has been for the last 5 years.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't see an easy way out of it for the Colts. They kind of mortgaged their future a little bit trying to win this year, and that didn't pan out. You know, so it's just kind of one of those things where it's kind of like I was at the McDonald's drive-thru the other morning. I was stuck. I got stuck in a rut, and my car wouldn't go forward. It wouldn't go backwards. I was just stuck. And so, you know, thankfully the guy behind me gave me a little nudge, the car kind of caught a spot where I could get out. But, we, you know, as Colts fans, we were watching this team, and we thought we were on our way out, and they looked really good.
I mean, this is a team in October that was looking Super Bowl 60 bound.
Yeah, and I think if Daniel Jones had obviously stayed healthy, it would have been different. But his, you know, first injured his leg, and
I think
then injured his Achilles.
The way the team was going, I think before, here's how I view the Daniel Jones injury. I think if he doesn't get injured, I think
they make the playoffs.
Make the playoffs. I don't know about Super Bowl, but 100% make the playoffs. I don't know whether that could be a 10-7 record, that could be an 11-6 record, but I think
they win that Seattle game. The Colts may have made the playoffs. They win that Seattle game.
And not to mention, you pretty darn close against Houston as well at home.
Yeah, I mean,
a couple of games.
You convert those games. Jacksonville, they were in that game.
Really, I don't want to say where it all went downhill, but you have to pinpoint. Kansas City was a big one. But you have to pinpoint the Los Angeles Rams game.
Yeah, they were right there.
If you have that win.
How about this? You got the four teams. The Colts didn't play the Patriots this year, but they should have beaten the Rams. They did beat the Broncos, and should have beaten the Seattle Seahawks.
it really is crazy. And I know there's a lot of controversy about the Denver win. You know what I say? Too bad, so sad.
I mean, Denver agreed with the call.
Yeah.
Sean Payton agreed with the call. It was leverage.
So
they don't call it very often, but it was the call, and it did happen. That's what gets me, too. I see this. I don't know why Twitter gives me these, but like every person that ever complains about every officiating call, they're usually right. The officials are usually right.
Yep. There's a reason why you're typing on an app that was made over a decade ago and not out there in a zebra striped uniform.
The rule may stink, like the catch rule, but that Buffalo game, that was not a catch. He didn't control the football when he rolled over and the ball came out. And everybody's like freeze framing on the spot where he went down and his knee was down and he was contacted. Okay, well, that's part of it. But when he rolled over, he didn't have the ball. The ball came out. So that is not a catch. Whereas I think in the Bears game, they had a similar thing. That was a catch because he controlled the ball. He took a football step or made a play common to the game or whatever. And I think, too, that all the video and stuff that's available has made it very difficult for them to know. But back to the Colts, I think the Colts are just going to have to ride it out this year and see what happens. Probably finish 8-9, 9-8 again, which I know everybody in Indianapolis is just thrilled about. The Colts, I will say this, they were in the top half in attendance this year in the league. So at least the fan support is there. I think Carly Ursay Gordon knows what she's doing. I do. I just think her hands are kind of tied right now.
Mm-hmm.
Shane Steichen is signed through 2030 as the head coach, which I didn't know. Chris Ballard's contract is up this year.
Yeah.
So I would.
I personally.
I mean, unless the Colts.
I'm sorry. There's no way that can be a re-sign.
Well, unless the Colts do something this year. But even if they don't, I mean, even if they, let's say the Colts go 10-7 and squeak into the playoffs and lose in the first round.
I don't.
How can you keep Chris Ballard with his record?
Yeah. Final thing here.
To be fair to Chris Ballard, he has had some really weird things happen here.
He's had some bad luck.
I mean, the owner went crazy, hired Jeff Saturday to be the head coach.
That did happen.
You know, he had to deal with who knows what Mr. Ursay was going through. You know, we're learning things about that now.
No, the FBI was looking into his death, too. So.
And, you know, we're learning things about that now. And certainly the Ursay daughters, I think, have a different perspective than maybe their dad did. So all of this is a time of transition for the Colts. And to be fair to Chris Ballard, it hasn't all been his fault. But yet, there are some just decisions that you're just like head scratching.
Finally, we'll switch gears back to the NBA. And the Indiana Pacers, right now, one of the worst teams in the league.
I'm proud of the Pacers, though.
I think, I don't know how much you've really looked into this next draft, but if the Pacers get the number one overall pick, who are you looking at? There's been talks. There's really the big three. It's Boozer, A.J. DeBanta, and Darren Peterson.
Well, one of those players, I think, with where the Pacers are, and people are like, why do they keep winning? Why? Because they're competitive.
Yeah.
And the team isn't that bad.
Now that
they're getting people back, you're starting to see that the reason the Pacers went so far last year was their bench was really good.
Yeah, I still think.
I mean, you're going to get Obi Toppin back soon.
If this team had a viable center, I think that this team could have been a play-in team from the start.
Siakam's probably an all-star, even if he doesn't make it.
Siakam should, in my opinion, he should be an All-NBA team this year.
And so, what are they, 12-36, something like 12 that?
12-37, I believe so.
You know, they had a great comeback against the Bulls. I'm still proud of them because I think it is really cool what they're doing. But it would be great to get into the top three and get one of those players. That just adds something when Tyrese Haliburton, who's 215 pounds now, by the way.
He's been bulking.
I know.
Man, but that has been a talk too. A lot of people's hearing their Achilles. Does the NBA need to cut down on their scheduling, you think? Or is it just the players got to take better care of themselves?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's any. I mean, you've had the key injuries, but I mean, they played 82 games forever.
Yeah, I'd say it doesn't change the fact, but that being
said, they used to play a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So you just wonder if there's something different in maybe how players are working out or if, like, because, like, a lot of the guys that have been getting hurt have been playing extra games because they've been in the Olympics or other things like that. It makes you wonder if, like, when the Olympics come up, if somebody will be like, well, I don't really want to play in the Olympics because it's extra wear and tear on my body.
With that being said, we've run out of time for the second episode of Hash Marks in Hardwood. Bryce Nell alongside Mr. Easter.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. As always, next week we'll have James Boyd live in studio.
My buddy James Boyd.
For the third episode on Hash Marks and Hardwood. That being said, stay warm, everyone. Ooh. And
go Giants.
Yeah, go Giants tonight. Big game. As you're listening to this, it's probably me and Parker on the call. So everyone, have a wonderful day. Stay warm. And I'm going to send you off here. Have a great day.